Big show for you here today. It is the start of position preview week. We've got quarterbacks for you here today. Scott Pienowski and I do a full deep dive of the quarterback position. We've got our red light players, yellow light players, green light players, the top 12 overall ranked quarterbacks. Which ones are we drafting? Which ones are we out on this year? Full deep dive into the quarterback position coming at you on this one. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Shoot, it's a hell of a week to talk ball because it is position preview week, and joining me for the first stop on what's going to be a grand tour to preview all the fantasy-relevant positions, quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, tight ends. Today, we've got quarterbacks on the docket, and we've got my good friend, my guy, Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy? How you doing? Scott, I don't know if you're muted, buddy, but I can't hear you. So let's try that all again. He's doing so good. He couldn't wait to mute himself to not talk. I was wondering if at the behind the scenes little product here when we're in the green room, if Scott was, I was giving a really good dissertation about how much I'm enjoying the Red Rising series, the graphic audio book, and Scott was just completely ignoring me. So I thought he might not have been interested in my breakdown of the Red Rising series book, but it looks like his mic is just muted. So while Scott figures that out, I'm going to let you guys know the structure of position preview week here. All week long, we're, like I said, we are going to be previewing all of the relevant fantasy positions. So today is quarterback, as mentioned. Tomorrow will be wide receivers with Ray Garvin. Then we've got the next day up. We've got Justin Boone on the running backs. We've got tight ends later on this week as well. Here's how these position preview shows are going to go. We are going to take a big picture look at the full state of the quarterback position and strategy this year. Really like a 3,000 foot view of the entire position, just where we're at, how loaded it is, the whole deal. Top 12, we'll look at the top 12 rankings for each players, and then our red light and green light players at ADP. So guys that we're really in on, guys that we are targeting this year, and then guys that we are not totally in on at ADP this year. And then we will wrap it up with some sleepers. So that's how all of our position preview shows are going to go. We will get into every single one of those throughout the course of the week. We'll do quarterbacks here today, provided Scott can get his microphone situation figured out. But before we do go into the quarterback position, we do have some breaking news over the weekend. Unfortunately, some negative news, a lot of injuries here to talk about with the fantasy fallout situation. First up, Commanders left tackle Laremy Tunsil suffered a torn triceps during a one-on-one pass rush drill at practice Saturday, and he's likely going to require surgery on that injury. Mike Garafolo of, I believe, NFL Network, ESPN. Not sure how to figure all that out right now. But anyways, Mike Garafolo reports that Commanders, like I mentioned, left tackle Laremy Tunsil, is going to require surgery. He's going to miss at least a significant portion of the regular season. Honestly, it sounds like, based on other reports, that his season might truly be in doubt right now. Like, we could maybe just not have Laremy Tunsil throughout the course of the regular season. Really unfortunate situation here. This is one of the offensive linemen that actually, I think, truly moves the needle. You know, producer Colin and I were talking about this morning, that it felt like last year the fantasy community was a little bit slow to react to Joe Alt and, Rashawn Slater first, and obviously Joe Alt had injury issues as well. But that was like a red flag for this entire team last year. And will be likely the same here for the Washington Commanders. This is one of the left tackles that you like cannot afford to lose here. Scott, do we have your audio now? Can we talk a little Commanders here?
I hope so. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, buddy. Sound great.
We're in. This is like Derek Smalls breaking through, and this is Spinal Tap. Yeah, I'm excited to be talking quarterbacks with you. And unfortunately, we have to talk training camp injuries. And guys are going down left and right, and Tunsil, a big part of that Washington offense, right? I mean, last year, everything goes off script when Daniels gets hurt. We were hoping for a clean run out for them. And, you know, Tunsil, people say fantasy, well, I don't draft offensive linemen, but you need to know who these guys are. Just look at how the Chargers offense got derailed last year when their offensive line went kablooey. Look at what's going on with Carolina this year. Are their tackles going to be healthy? Who's going to block for whether it's Hubbard or Brooks or Bryce Young or stuff like that? So when Tunsil injury news comes down, it just makes you nervous. Of course, we already have a nebulous backfield in Washington. Which back do you want to draft? Are you back in on Daniels? Are you buying Diggs there for his final stop of his NFL career, comeback season for Terry McLaurin? Laremy Tunsil is a big part of all of that DNA, staying together and giving us the run out that we want.
Yeah, Tunsil, I mean, he's a top five, top three left tackle in the NFL right now. Like, this is a huge needle moving injury. And luckily, the Commanders do have at least a backup plan that I think is probably viable. As we're showing on the depth chart right now, it looks like their former third round pick, Brandon Coleman, who started games for them at left tackle before, is most likely, according to Nikki Javala, is likely to move to the left tackle position. He was kind of competing at the left guard spot, gets this flip back to left tackle. He was their starter for the vast majority of the 2024 season, when obviously this was one of the best offenses in the NFL. He started a few games late last season. So, yeah, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. Like, when the first reports came out that it was like they're going to move Andrew Wiley, who's only ever started at right tackle, to left tackle, I thought that was, no good. But still, there's no way to put lipstick on a pig here. This is a debilitating injury to the entire offense here, Scott. And to your point, when people say they're not drafting offensive lines in fantasy, yeah, you are. Fantasy football, and obviously you know this way more, you're doing fantasy in the other sports and the whole deal, but with fantasy football, like, you're not just drafting the individual player, you're drafting all of the other surrounding variables that really go into it. Especially like a wide receiver, you're drafting that wide receiver's quarterback. For a quarterback, you're drafting the entire ecosystem, the play caller, the offensive lineman. And this is just one of those, like, to quote my old buddy Dave Damashek from the NFL Network, like, this is one of those Jenga piece players in Laremy Tunsil. So this is a Commanders team, Scott, that I was optimistic, if not just like outright curious about on offense this year. And now I'm really kind of looking at, putting that under the microscope really here. And oh, by the way, like, they're also trying to break in a new center. They kind of misread the center market when they released Tyler Biadasz this year, who was immediately scooped up by the Los Angeles Chargers. Nick Allegretti right now is not participating in training camp. He's yet to get out there. So a lot of questions here along the offensive line beyond just, what does the skill position players look like here, Scott? Has the Laremy Tunsil injury forced you to kind of maybe start docking some Commanders in your mind?
I feel like I was already maybe a half step behind this offense anyway. We saw the rookie year for Daniels, the porridge was hot last year. The porridge obviously went cold when Daniels wasn't healthy, but a lot of things went wrong. This was a very old team when its construction, and this, a lot of things needed to be fixed. And if we can just get the porridge just right, I'll be happy. I'm also really happy just to hear a Dave Damashek reference, which makes me want to talk about the Commanders' nickname and uniforms for like the next 25 minutes. Nothing like great Dave Damashek, one of my favorite just people and commentators on the NFL. So I'm glad you dropped his name in here. But
Scott, Dave gave me my first like shot on camera ever.
Did he really?
NFL Network. Yeah, he did. No, he's a gem. I will always go to bat for Dave. Yeah, he was one of those moments too where I'd done plenty of times like his podcast, and then I walk in there and the whole thing's lit up, the cameras or whatever. I'm like, is this show on camera? I've never done it. I've never done like anything on camera before. He's like, you'll be fine. Just talk football.
That's right. That's right. Dave. Yeah. Just in your best Pittsburgh voice, your best Zinsser voice. But, the other thing is you talk about, you need to know the play callers, right? You need to know the offensive line. I challenge you, dear listener, dear viewer, what's the last offense that we ever said, yeah, it's a really good offense, even though the offensive line stinks? We never say that. Can you think of any offense that has done that, right? I mean, again, the Chargers making the playoffs last year with that offensive line going kablooey was something, but think of how just about everybody in that offense fell below their range last year. So, yeah, you want to at least feel good about the offensive line, not be worried about it. It's okay sometimes if these units are somewhere in the middle. You don't want to be on the bad end of it. Then it's like, oh, can Devin Achane survive in Miami with that offensive line? Or what's going on in Arizona? Or some of the worst teams in football, is the blocking good enough in Cleveland? They've tried to upgrade that position. So just, you're not drafting these guys, but you have to have an idea what's going on there, just like you want to feel good about the play callers. And I don't know about you, Matt, and maybe this is a show you've already done or it's coming later. in the month, you know, in the minds of producer Colin. But, you know, just the offenses that have the good vibes and the bad vibes. And that's going to be a lot of offensive line, a lot of play caller, a lot of, you know, what's the structure of the target tree, things like that. You know, I find myself by the end of the draft season really focused on, I just want to, what are the offenses that are good? Let's draft those guys, right? What are the offenses that aren't good? Let's not draft those guys. Sometimes fantasy really reduces to that simple of a concept.
Yeah, especially this month, right? Because we do shows all year long, and I've probably been like truly a Commander's optimist for most of this offseason. But then, you know, 24 hours ago, it really changes with the Laremy Tunsil injury, and they might be one of those by the end of it that they're a bad vibes team, which is funny because like I just thought like, oh, Stephon Diggs makes so much sense for what they needed. But I will say, Scott, the one rankings change I'm really looking hard at right now, you know, we're going to do, as I mentioned, the red light, green light, you know, yellow light players for the quarterback position today and all throughout position week. I'm not going to straight up call Terry McLaurin like a guy that's going to go from a true green light player for me. He was my 40th overall ranked player, wide receiver 20, very much a green light ahead of ADP. I'm not going to say that he's going to go all the way to a red light, but I am, and I hate to say this because, you know, you and I have talked glowingly about McLaurin over the years. I hate to say this, but I think he's a guy that's going to have to drop in my rankings, not just because of the Stephon Diggs signing. And Diggs is a true target quote earner. You know, he's still very, very good, still got it. He also was so good on these like quick hitting routes last year where he can pile up a lot of layup receptions. I think Terry's going to get more layups in this offense than previously, but he is fifth in air yards per target over the last two seasons combined, behind Alec Pierce, Kayshon Booty, Calvin Ridley, Roma Dunze, just ahead of Rashid Shaheed. Like, he's been a vertical receiver before. And if I'm weighing which one of these guys can maybe survive off gimme catches and stuff like that, if Laremy Tunsil is going to miss the entire season and the pass protection is going to be materially worse, I do think Terry is more susceptible to that based on who he is as a player versus who Diggs is as a player in current version.
You know, all those discussions we're having online these days about Zay Flowers is always open, but why doesn't he score touchdowns? We used to say that about Terry McLaurin, right? Before that 13 touchdown season in 2024, and a lot of it was, it's not your fault, it's the quarterback play. But Terry McLaurin has generally not been a touchdown scorer. And a little bit sneaky old, he came into the NFL in his age 24 season. So this is an age 31 season for Terry McLaurin. And the more I play fantasy, and I realize you and I just a couple weeks ago were fighting over Mike Evans at the Fantasy Football Expo because we both had a wide receiver need. He's in his age 33 season.
I don't love that, by the way, now. You know,
well,
I love that we were doing that now.
I got Ricky Pearsall in that draft, so ask me how I love it. Yeah, I the longer I play fantasy, Matt, the more I want to skew with front nine players, with rising players, with players who haven't had their best season yet. We can't say that about McLaurin because 2024 is almost uncertainly going to go down as his best season. But, man, this is the first year I've ever drafted. Last year, the contract stuff made me nervous, but I still was probably moderate weight on McLaurin in my draft profile. This is the first year I'm probably a half step behind McLaurin. And really, as I said earlier, a half step behind the Washington offense. And if they beat me, they beat me.
Yeah, despite the fact that Diggs came into the league in 2015 and Terry 2019, these guys are only about a year and a half apart in age. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's so hard with Terry, whose reception perception profile is going to go on the site tomorrow along with Diggs. So very heavy Commanders week for me. You can excuse it because he came in with the holdout, and obviously then he played through injuries and stuff like that. I don't think he was at his best last year, and that's always going to make me nervous, even if I can write it off. It's always going to make me a little nervous for a guy at this point in his career. I like the way you said that, like, where just you can break ties in favor of some front nine players as opposed to back nine players. I kind of want to do it, and I'm just looking at guys that I have him in the same range of, you know, whether it's Tedrow, McMillan, Garrett Wilson, the Bears receivers, although we'll talk about one of those in a second. I'm kind of maybe breaking ties in favor of the younger guys right now at this point. But hopefully I'm overreacting because I do love Terry McLaurin's game. Speaking of wide receiver injuries, just want to quickly run through a few of these. And I think there's only one we really need to truly react to, but a lot of wide receiver injuries over the course of the last few days at training camp. Rashee Rice left practice early on Saturday. Maybe an injury, reason unknown there. Zay Flowers suffered a left quad contusion Saturday. He's going to be day-to-day. They're not too worried about that. Josh Downs, groin injury. Stephen Holder reported today of ESPN, cover the team forever. He has said that that's not a serious injury. He could return to practice as soon as Tuesday. The one that maybe had the most negative, I don't want to say negative, but just least optimistic painting to it. We just got reports from Ian Rappaport that Luther Burden, Bears receiver, who went down with a injury in one-on-ones, suffered a groin injury and, quote, will miss a little bit of time. I don't know what a little bit of time means. Nobody knows what a little bit of time means. I've gotten, you know, messages from folks that have, who would know and been like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. He's going to be ready for week one. I'm like, okay, week one's like a month from now. I was assuming he's going to be ready for week one. So Scott, this is probably the one that I think we should at least note, that he might be someone that, you know, is a don't draft into injuries type of player right now. But are you worried about the Luther Burden reports?
Yeah, I think you have to be. And this is a player who had so much helium this draft season. His ADP has just constantly been rising as we're excited about Ben Johnson. We're excited about Caleb Williams. We're even excited about a defense that could be leaky. This could be a shootout team, a carnival team. And remember, you know, the Bears, you know, they inherited some players. They drafted some players. You know, they drafted Loveland. They drafted Burden. They drafted Caleb Williams. This is an offense we really thought was maybe going to the moon. And because the price has been so expectant on Burden, to get any kind of pushback on it, to get any momentum on the story going in the wrong direction, that's breaking ties for me. I felt like you had to elbow the rest of the room out of the way to get Burden already. And now it's like, how can I get more shares of Loveland? Adunze is going to have that foot issue, and we'll see how we feel about that. But maybe the right answer in that offense is him, or maybe the right answer in this offense is Caleb Williams or DeAndre Swift. I still think Ben Johnson is going to have at minimum a top 10 offense. I'd like to think it's a top 5 fantasy offense. But Burden, who I was reluctantly probably going to be underweight on only because the market was so excited about him, now that there's a little bit of red ink here, I get a step back from it. And I hate saying that. Now, Loveland is not inexpensive either. You could argue there's as much helium with Loveland as there is with Burden. But this just means that if I go into my draft, I may be a little bit more focused on Loveland, or certainly in the salary cap draft, I would be pushing back extra dollars to try to get Coastal Loveland on my team.
Yeah, listen, I mean, our platform here on Yahoo probably had like the most reasonable ADP on Luther Burden at 58th overall. I was ahead of that from an overall perspective. I'm ahead overall on all of the Bears pass catchers, because as I've said, I think this is going to be a great offense and a really highly concentrated offense. So I'm not going to dock Luther Burden too much. Like, if I was drafting today, I think maybe I'd dock him a couple of spots, but I'm open to just seeing if this is a 1 or 2 week injury and then he's back on the practice field and that's fine. I do also just want to bring back in a note from Roma Dunze's interview at the Super Bowl, where he said to me that the biggest thing that was a problem for him was not so much getting back physically, but missing practice reps with Caleb Williams in this very timing based offense ended up being a problem for him in the back half of the year, more so than like playing through an injury necessarily from a physical standpoint. So that's something I at least want to keep in the back of my mind with Luther Burden. And then secondly, like, I do think this is just going to shine a bigger light on the fact that I think Roma Dunze being 10 spots behind Luther Burden from an overall ADP perspective is kind of crazy. It's so funny, Scott. Like, I don't typically try to just observe like what are people tweeting about, but I mean, my entire timeline, every time there's a Luther Burden highlight from training camp, that thing gets reposted 25, 30 times. Roma Dunze has like a sick catch from training camp. Nobody's talking about it. Like, truly, it's not going anywhere in the fantasy streets. But the buzz has been really positive on all these players. Obviously, the second-year guys typically get the bigger hype from the coaches, hype in the fantasy Twitter streets. But, yeah, I think this is just another good opportunity to note, like, if Burden does miss any time, Odunze is in a really good position here to be the highest targeted player. So we are definitely at least going to keep an eye on the Luther Burden injury and see where that goes. But let's get into the quarterback position here, Scott, because this is a fun fantasy position this year. When you look over the course of the quarterback landscape, what does it look like to you here in 2026?
It's so deep. You can do well at any price point. I always make the comparison. It's the New York subway system. If you miss a train, there's another one coming in 5 minutes. I challenge anybody to screw up quarterback this year. You're going to feel really good whether you go vanity, whether you go in the second tier, whether you take it, you know, JJ Zach Reason, late round QB. I just think you can do well at any price point. And for me, it's going to be kind of a hard fade at the top, only because I keep telling myself, is Dak Prescott that much different than Joe Burrow? right? Or can Trevor Lawrence be as good as Lamar Jackson or Drake May? I don't see any reason why those guys can't. We're going to talk more in detail about that. But to me, I'm not going to break the seal at quarterback. There'll be a lot of leagues where I might be the last team to draft a quarterback, but I'll be the first team to get my backup in Superflex. I think you can do really well with like a B and a B-plus quarterback. And somebody else chase the quote-unquote MVP candidates or the A-tier quarterbacks. So I know Boone's not on the show today. He would be saying we're crazy. What, Josh Allen's the number one, number two quarterback every year. Why don't you want that? It's an advantage. But I don't like the way my receiver and running back builds often turn out when I take the Allens, the Jacksons, the Mays, even going down to maybe Jalen Hurts. So to me, I think it's a great year to shop in the second, third, or fourth tier.
Yeah, I think, again, to quote another great fantasy analyst, Rich Rebar always talks about arbitrage plays at each different position. I agree with you that I feel like there are arbitrage plays on that second tier of quarterbacks. You know, Joe Burrow to Dak Prescott's a great example. I would say Drake May to, you know, like a Bo Nix. Could Bo Nix be last year's, you know, version of Drake May? I think that's entirely possible. There's a lot of arbitrage plays just over the course of the quarterback position, which is why I've typically not shopped in that second tier, as we'll talk about later on here. That's where a lot of the red light players, to use Scott's terms. I'm totally ripping your terminology here for the entire position preview week. So I hope you appreciate that, Scott, because it is obviously a hat tip to you here.
Well, I did start the American, you know, roads, you know, stop, yield, you know,
I mean, you were around when we started doing that, right? Like for sure.
Yeah. When you're at a four-way stop, you know, that's basically the work of Scott Pianowski.
They call it civil, the Pianowski, yeah.
Civil engineer, right? So, yeah, it's the thing I love about red light, green light, yellow light is it just makes you clear how you feel about somebody. And it's pretty much how you are in any fantasy part. It's like, oh, man, I can't wait to draft this guy. I'll elbow you out of the way. Those are our green light guys. I'm not touching that player. He makes me nervous. We didn't talk about Rashee Rice, who you mentioned very briefly in that earlier segment, but he's just one of my red light players between the injuries, totally between the offense. I think he's a little bit overrated, and the fact that there's a little bit off-field knucklehead risk with Rashee Rice, I put him in the red light. And then these yellow light guys are, you're probably playing the market on them. You're probably playing timing. It may be the flow of your draft or the roster construction. You're okay with them in the right context. You're not necessarily chasing them, but you're certainly not counting them out. So again, it's Goldilocks, you know, the hot, the just right, the cold. I mean, you probably find yourself, dear listener, you probably, without realizing it, have been playing the red light, green light, yellow light game your whole life.
So I think we're in agreement about where a lot of the green light players are at the quarterback position this year. Although to me, Scott, that does specifically speak to, or maybe it doesn't, you push back on me here on this. I think that does obviously specifically speak to like one quarterback leagues. I think that's one where in one quarterback league, I might truly be sick enough to say, hey, I'll kick it all the way down to like Tyler Shuck and Malik Willis and figure the rest out later. How does that change for you in a super flex league? You know, where then do we kind of move the barometer up and down here from like where are we attacking the quarterback position? How does that change for you in a super flex based strategy?
Yeah, again, I teased this earlier, and this is something I would do in one quarterback, but certainly I love doing it in super flex, which is I don't have to have the best quarterback one, but I want the best quarterback two. So I could have a situation where I have, I don't know, Prescott and Goff, or I could have Justin Herbert and Matthew Stafford, something like that, where I'm going to double tap in a draft, or I'm going to shop in that second or third tier in a salary cap draft. I love having, I'm going to beat you with two really good quarterbacks, because the problem you're going to have in Superflex is if you pay up for Josh Allen, you really can't pay up for another quarterback, because then you're going to have your field players are going to be so skinny. And it's so difficult to find impact players at receiver. We always talk about that. And every running back who comes on the waiver wire who's of interest, every team is going to be going after that player. Where, you know, say Malik Willis isn't drafted in your league, or say Bryce Young isn't drafted in your league, and they become fantasy relevant early in the season. These aren't 12-team bidding wars, even in Superflex. Some people are like, hey, I'm set at that position. I have other needs. I'm going to let that go to somebody else. That's another reason why we can be budget conscious at this position, because when guys do emerge, we don't necessarily have to have a fight with the rest of our league to land those players.
Where you do end up having to have that fight, though, is like on the waiver wire. Obviously, that's something to keep in mind. Like, I do, once I get into the season for super flex leagues, I am trying to be pretty aggressive to get that those random quarterbacks, because you just never know who that guy's going to end up being. One of my favorite stories is like in Dynasty. It was a year that Aaron Rodgers, I think it was the year that Aaron Rodgers was hurt with the Jets. And I'm pretty sure this is the same season, but he was like my longtime quarterback too. I had Josh Allen as my quarterback one. So that year I was just kind of juggling through the second quarterback position, you know, just, it was not a pretty situation. So I was very aggressive, and obviously this is a dynasty league, so it's, you know, a little bit different, but I was just kind of cycling like whoever was the random backup starting for this, that, and the other team. And then eventually that landed me on Brock Purdy, who's just been like my quarterback two basically ever since. So I always try to tell people, when, if you're playing in super flex, and yeah, I agree, like you can wait on this position maybe more than you think in drafts, but corresponding to that, I want you to be kind of pretty aggressive on the waiver wire to sort of just sort through those backup quarterbacks.
If you're playing super flex, I want three starters. So you're going to have to get familiar totally. With where are you on Sam Darnold? Where are you on CJ Stroud, Cam Ward, yeah. Jacoby Brissett? One of those guys is going to be somebody you feel comfortable with as your QB3. And those are great trading courtesy players in a super flex format.
Don't turn your nose up at Geno Smith or, you know,
for sure.
Kirk Cousins even.
Like one of the Raiders, yeah.
These guys can get you through moments. That is why super flex is really fun, by the way, because it just – if you are in a normal one quarterback fantasy league, I would say in 98% of the universes, you're never thinking about Kirk Cousins. In a super flex league, you might be thinking about Kirk Cousins in the year 2026. And that's just what makes it a little bit fun. By the way, I would just also note, and this was something I'm going to kind of try to bring up throughout the course of position preview week. Got a really good message from a good email from one of our listeners, Scott, Lionel. Shout out to Lionel. Sent me like a big email with thoughts and everything about talking, you know, how essentially to summarize the email, like just league formats, and his specific point was about when you and I said, well, we don't want you to get behind, specifically I kept saying I don't want you to get behind at running back this year, but we also said like try to build the best wide receiver room possible. That is something that I'm trying to be really cognizant of, that when we're giving strategy for one position, it also impacts the other. And a big reason why, Scott, in one quarterback leagues this year, I'm pretty comfortable pushing off the quarterback position, even though we'll talk about some of the top guys here on the other side of the break. I really think at tight end this year, I don't want you waiting forever. Like, I don't know that I necessarily want you taking Trey McBride or one of the top guys, but I kind of want you to live in the middle class at the tight end position this year, which is not something I normally do. And for that reason, because we also don't want you to get behind at running back and we want you to build this great wide receiver room, you got to sacrifice somewhere. To me, Scott, this is going to come up over the course of the conversation. I do think quarterback is the place to sacrifice this year.
Yeah, it should be the last starter that you draft on your fantasy roster. I'm not saying the last round, but I'm saying the last starting position that you fill.
All right, we are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we talk through the top 12 ranked players here by all of us analysts at Yahoo. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Let's get into our consensus top 12 players here in the Yahoo rankings. This is the consensus rankings between Boone, Joel Smith, myself, Scott Pienowski, Hayden Winks, and Josh Norris here. All of the, you know, very, very fine analysts here at Yahoo. The top 12 guys, we got Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Justin Herbert, Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy, and Jackson Dart. All right, so Scott, in this top 12, I do want to stick at the very top here and just quickly talk about Josh Allen, who is kind of in a tier of his own here. In my rankings from a tier perspective, he is definitely in his own tier. He is the QB1. And from an ADP perspective, that is very much the case here. ADP of 20th overall in the last 7 days among Yahoo drafters. QB2, Lamar Jackson, is 39th overall. So there's definitely a teardrop from Josh Allen to everyone else in the minds of all fantasy drafters. And certainly in myself as well. Although based on the conversation earlier, I'm guessing you probably haven't clicked on a lot of Josh Allen in many of your drafts this year.
I think I'm not going to have any Josh Allen this year. It's a lonely teardrop for me. It's the opportunity cost you pay at running back and at wide receiver. And because I feel so good about so many different quarterbacks in other offenses. Josh Allen is incapable of having a poor season. And you could even say maybe his best season is going to come. They got DJ Moore there, and Allen is still dynamic as a runner. The pieces around him look really good. If they can keep Dalton Kincaid healthy for a full season, it's amazing what he did last year on 38% of the snaps, man. Just crazy. One of my favorite stats from last season. But the players you're not getting, the players your opponents are taking when you take Josh Allen, I just can't stomach that. And this is why we encourage people to be in multiple leagues, you know, do some best ball drafts, do some mock drafting, and say, okay, fine, draft Josh Allen and see what you feel like with your running back and receiver rooms, or even your tight end situation. You spoke before the break about how you wanted to prioritize, or at least quasi prioritize, that position. You just can't do those things if you take a vanity quarterback. So the position scores a lot of points. I don't think the delta, and understanding that Allen's going to be the best quarterback, I'm just going to be spotting points to the Allen team week in, week out. I can live with that because I just feel that great about the players behind him. And the funny thing is, even though I'm not drafting Allen, you might say, well, great, you know, well, Lamar Jackson's cheaper, and you know, Daniels is a couple of rounds cheaper, and you know, May's at a reasonable price. He's got A.J. Brown to play with now. Obviously, Burrow, when he's healthy, would see what he can do. I'm actually not drafting in that tier either. It's the guys after that, those next four or five players, man, that is my go zone. That is my shopping center. That's where I can't wait to get out the checkbook.
And it's funny because, again, this is why, you know, doing drafts, like actually putting, you know, your rankings to the test really can change how you view things. Because I would say probably 2 months ago, I really thought I'd, and obviously some of the stuff we talked about it with the news, Laramie Tunsil and everything like that, that really changes it. I would have thought I would be in on Jaden Daniels, you know, this year, and I'd be drafting a lot of him. And he is definitely someone at some level I'm interested in. Our Yahoo rankings are higher than ADP on Jaden Daniels. He's the 55th overall player. He is our QB3. There are at least two quarterbacks, Drake May and Joe Burrow, who go ahead of him, you know, rather significantly, you know, ahead, higher than him from an ADP standpoint. But just when I've done these drafts and I take the quarterback in the 50s, I really just don't like the way my team comes together, especially at running back. Like receiver, you can find some guys later on. You can get some unexpected players, but it's just really tough. So I agree with you. I haven't really shopped in that tier. Although if I was to kind of put your feet to the fire here a little bit, Scott, if we're talking about this second tier of quarterbacks, which to me is, you know, 39th overall, Lamar Jackson, he kind of a little bit of his own thing. But I do want to talk about Lamar a little bit more when we get to the red light, yellow light section. So maybe this next group of guys, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, who there tempts you the most? And is it Drake May, because your heart is a flutter still for Drake May?
It is Drake May, but it's because my heart is a flutter for A.J. Brown and Romeo Doubs and Josh McDaniels and May, of course, and into his third season. Yeah. But it's really, if you ask yourself, if you draft Drake May, you ask yourself, are we still on the front nine with A.J. Brown? Is he going to win the breakup with the Eagles? Is Romeo Doubs, did they overpay for him and overslot him? Or is he really an impact player on a team that has playoff expectations? And obviously, they just went to the Super Bowl last year where everything fell right with the schedule and some of their opponents. But May also, you know, athletic, resourceful as a runner. That's the thing about the Patriots is they could be just as good as they were last year in true strength and still be like a 10 or 11 win team or even a 9 win team, because the schedule and the variance is going to kick in. So we have to live with that. But it's going to hurt me when I don't draft Drake May this year. I don't think I'm going to do it very often. I may not even do it at all, only because of the depth of this position. But May is the one guy who's kind of in that 2 to 6 quarterback range where it's going to kill me to not be in on it, but I'm not going to be in on it.
Yeah, I mean, as the new YouTube intro to the show, which looks great, by the way, shout out to Jason Jung. As you say in that intro, Scott, none of you are going to say a negative word about Drake May. And yeah, correct. I will still not be saying a negative word about Drake May almost 365 days later. If you're just an audio listener, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But by the way, subscribe to the Yahoo Fantasy YouTube channel, okay? I mean, come on. You know what even sounds better than Scott Pienaski? Looking at Scott Pienaski as he's delivering these wisdoms here. So yeah, go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can check out the new intro. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to say anything negative about Drake May, but what if, Scott, like, my answer to this question actually would be, What if it's Jalen Hurts that wins the breakup with AJ Brown? What if it's Jalen Hurts, you know, you remove the variable of AJ Brown, which is tough, obviously. You know, you're losing a guy who, even if you have some questions, as I do, about like how much is left in the tank for AJ Brown, like where is he on the process of the decline? You know, you're losing a good player. That never is great. However, you got a wide receiver one in ready in Devontae Smith, although would love it if he could get out there at practice. He's been dealing with a hamstring injury. Mekhi Lemon also dealing with a hamstring injury. That's not ideal either. They are giving some pub to Dontavian Wicks. I'll admit that like I've got a little half of an eye maybe on the Dontavian Wicks situation. And I just generally think that this offense, if Jalen Hurts, and it is an if Jalen Hurts can fit into it, you know, I think it actually could increase the efficiency of the passing game overall, as they're going to be changing things under Sean Mannion. But Sean Mannion's also still going to keep a lot of the quarterback run game. He was talking about that this week. So I also am not shopping in this second tier necessarily. I haven't come away with a lot of Jalen Hurts teams, especially because for me, he's the last guy in the tier, 56th overall, my sixth ranked quarterback, the whole deal. But he at least tempts me a little bit more than some of the other guys here.
Yeah, this is one thing where we don't agree on, because for me, Hurts, I've never loved him as a pocket passer. Last year, we saw the running production went down, obviously, with a different coordinator, and Kevin Petullo was blamed for a lot of what went wrong in Philadelphia last year. So they're happy to be moving on from that. But just 7.1 YPA last year for Hurts. And now they've changed. They have repainted this wide receiver room, but so much to the point that I don't think a quick onboarding is the can be reasonably expected in Philadelphia. It hurts that Lemon is missing reps this summer. Wicks is obviously new to the team, Hollywood Brown. What's left with Dallas Goedert? I like Devonta Smith. He's a little bit dinged up now as well. I always talk about trying to get off to that good start, that 3-1, 4-0, 4-1 type of fantasy start. I think the Eagles are going to be, we're going to be asking, what's wrong with the Eagles? Are the Eagles in the panic meter? That's going to be something we're going to be saying a month into the season, because so many new players are here, a new coordinator. You have to give time for that stuff to gel, for timing to set in, for tendency, you know, just to get your routines down. So I don't think the Eagles are going to get off to a quick start. We'll see if they can justify where they're going, where they're being drafted. And also, I wonder if Hurts is just done as a double-digit touchdown scorer on the ground. And without that, I can't justify the real estate he currently holds in ADP.
I will say, though, like to kind of talk both sides here on this issue, because as you're speaking, I'm like, you know, that's actually a really good point. Like, this could be a slow start team overall, because it's a new coordinator. It is a system overhaul to some degree, and Hurts does have to adjust to that. There's just no question about that. I think anybody who's watched Jalen Hurts throughout the course of his career, and I'm with you where I've been a little bit up and down on Hurts at times, there's no question that it will have to be an adjustment for him. And the fact that the receivers are already banged up, that's not ideal. It could be one of those slow start teams. At the same time, though, their first three games, Scott, Commanders, Titans, Bears. Those are three pretty green light defenses to attack right there. So I actually, you know, kind of that I was like 1 foot out. Maybe now I'm like 1 foot back in based on the slow start for the Eagles here, just based on those defenses, which is tough. We never know which defenses are going to be good or bad, but I feel pretty good about the Commanders, Titans, and Bears not being among the best defenses in the NFL.
Totally fair, although I could cheat a little bit and say Rams week 4 and then Jaguars in week 5. So where does that go?
Oh, there's a reason I cut it off at week 3. Yeah, there's a reason I cut it off.
And plus, the week 5 is the Jaguars. I believe that might be a Europe game too. It's a 9:30 a.m. game. We know that Jacksonville is Europe's team. So it may be a case of, you know, the Philadelphia comes back from Europe after they've lost to the Rams and Jaguars, and we're like, what's wrong with the Eagles? That's I'm going to put my what's wrong with the Eagles pieces are all going to drop after week 5.
Okay, so quarterback 7 to 12 here, which is Justin Herbert, Caleb Williams, Trevor Lawrence, Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy, Jackson Dart. This is where, Scott, we'll just get into this right now. A lot of your green light players are here in this tier, and I'm with you here. I honestly, when I was like, okay, these are Scott's green light players, these are a lot of my green light quarterbacks too, so I think we're pretty much shopping in the same bucket here. So with a lot of these guys here, who just make the case for one of these players here that you really, really like as a green light guy, quarterback 7 to 12-ish.
I don't mean to cheat here. I'm happy with so many of these guys. I mean, Herbert, he's got McDaniel. He's got hopefully a healthy offensive line. There's still really interesting skill talent there. I can see Justin Herbert challenging for an MVP award. We talked about Caleb Williams a little bit earlier with the injuries in Chicago, but man, if they're healthy, we love Ben Johnson. The offense is going to have to outscore a leaky Chicago defense that has pinball written all over it. Pinball is the way Dak Prescott lives in Dallas. Everything we love about Joe Burrow, we should love about Dak Prescott too. He's got two dynamic receivers. The defense is bad, mostly an indoor schedule. So that's really exciting. Trevor Lawrence won your league for you last year with the way he finished the season. Liam Cohen, a right answer at the play caller. And even though it's a little bit difficult at times to sort out which Jaguar receiver we want to draft, they're all good. And they're all pointing to Trevor Lawrence being a dynamic fantasy player. And of course, Trevor Lawrence can run them in as well. Purdy and Dart are the guys I'm struggling with right now. Brock Purdy was on my list of targets. And in some of the premium content we've been putting out for Yahoo, I had Purdy there. And then, man, with this team being so old and so injury driven, and the Pearsall news popped, and I just get cold feet on that. Even their left tackle, their star left tackle, is like 100 years old. Williams, Brock Purdy's very good, but I'm a little bit nervous about what's around him. And between McCaffrey, Kittle, and Evans, what's a reasonable runout? Even Deebo Samuel added to that team. He's also a back nine player. How healthy and or productive can that group be? I think Purdy, maybe his setup isn't quite what I expected. With Dart, Konami code guy. Man, he needs to be a little bit more judicious. I just get nervous. He spent so much time last year in the concussion tent. How much has he gotten to be able to connect with neighbors? How many reps have they actually run? They hardly intersected last year. Dart is somebody I'm afraid will beat me, but I'm probably not going to draft proactively. Purdy went from green light to yellow light to me over the last couple of weeks. Just vibes on the age of this team, but everybody else I mentioned, I am excited to draft, and I'm going to be overweight when I add up my shares at the end of this draft season.
Yeah, we'll talk Purdy and Dart more in depth in the yellow light section, because they are yellow light players for you, not red light guys. But on the green light guys, like, I thought one of the things that you said there just really rings true with Caleb, with Justin Herbert, and Trevor Lawrence is just, I do want all these pass catchers. It's really hard to pick the pass catchers, but I know who's throwing them the football. I know who is throwing these players the football. So, yeah, those guys have been some of my favorite targets. I actually have the order of it as Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams. But from an overall perspective, like, I'm totally cool with you guys taking any of those players basically at any point in my overall rankings. As a matter of fact, to have them 75th, 76th, and 77th. So pretty much it's one of those, when you see one go, that's your signal to start jumping on that tier, because they, to me, do all kind of have the upside of, I could see any of them being the, maybe not Josh Allen quarterback one overall, but QB2, QB3, if everything really comes together. Especially Trevor Lawrence, like I mentioned, just career highs across the board on the show last week with Ray from a rushing perspective. I think that's going to continue. The drumbeat on Parker Washington is so deafening from training camp. And I mean, I kind of buy it just because I think they found the right role for him, and he's so good at what he is really good at. And they just have that, like, Travis Hunter is getting a bunch of rave reviews as well. Like, it's just, there's so much good in this Jacksonville environment. All three of those guys too, they're inner circle play callers, Mike McDaniel, Liam Cohen, Caleb Williams. They're just three very obvious guys to be in on. And then I do think, like, there's a drop off, still shopping in the same tier with some of these players. But when we get into the Dak Prescott and Jared Goff of it, I'm glad that you included Jared Goff here, Scott, because he's kind of the arbitrage on the arbitrage. Like, if Dak Prescott is the arbitrage Joe Burrow, Jared Goff is the arbitrage of Joe Burrow, in that it's a great offensive environment. I'm totally fine with Drew Petzing as the offensive coordinator because Dan Campbell's still there, and they have quality weapons and an offensive line that is not peak offensive line Lions-esque, but is still, to me, like a top 15 unit in the NFL.
Yep, certainly not a unit I'm going to worry about. And maybe it could even be a plus unit again. Indoor schedule, probably an easy schedule. We'll see how the defense holds up physically this year. Jared Goff, I know some of this is survivor bias, but he's got the most touchdown passes and the most passing yards over the last four seasons. By the way, I also loved how you gave Caleb Williams credit as being Chicago's play caller, which is nice. Wait till Ben Johnson gets Ben Johnson, wind of that. Yes, for sure. But let me just say one other thing about quarterback and shopping in this tier. You need to be aware, and this is not hard to track, whether you're doing it in the Yahoo draft room or even with just a piece of paper handy as you draft. Be aware of who's drafted quarterbacks and who isn't, and play your neighborhood, right? If you're going to wait and you see you're going to be tier driven, and there's maybe three or four guys in this tier that you like. You have the four pick. It's going 4-3-2-1. See what the 1, 2, and 3 teams have done at quarterback. If there's a Josh Allen manager sitting there, he's not taking a second quarterback. You can play it safe there. You want to be mindful of just even just put an X of who's filled at quarterback. And again, this is very trackable. The Yahoo draft room is incredibly intuitive, and you always want to be scrolling and recalibrating and just kind of getting a sense. In a salary cap draft, you need to be aware of everybody. In a snake draft, it's more you have to know your neighborhood. And one of the requirements of that is understanding who's drafted a quarterback and who isn't, because teams are not – anybody who takes a top five quarterback is not going to take a second quarterback in the top 10. It doesn't make any sense for them. But the teams who haven't drafted one, they may be eyeing the guy that you want. Now, you also have to decide how important is it for me to have my choice in this tier if you're shopping here like Matt and I probably are, where in a lot of leagues I'll probably take what's left to me, but I don't want to be left behind. Although even if you did, it wouldn't be the end of the world. You'd probably end up with somebody like Matthew Stafford, and I can live with it. There's some other guys we'll talk about later in the show. But good idea during your draft, especially if you're waiting on quarterback, just to be mindful of who else has filled the position.
One of those guys that probably won't, you don't necessarily need to do exact, because that's great advice, Scott, and it's so well taken. I think one of the guys you don't have to do this for, because he's going to be one of the last quarterbacks taken in a one quarterback league, but someone I do just want to advocate for really quickly before we get to break here and go to yellow light guys in the green light section. You had the Williams, Herbert, Lawrence, Prescott, Goff, and I rubber stamp all those. I agree. One guy I would want to throw in there as a green light player for me is Bo Nix. Bo Nix has outkicked his ADP. Before we've seen that happen. He's a proactive runner. Maybe not like a prolific Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen runner necessarily, but he is a proactive runner. We also talk about the guys that are in good offensive ecosystems. I mean, Bo Nix is definitely in a good offensive ecosystem. It's a really, really good pass protection offensive line. They're deep at running back, even if you've got questions about all three of those guys. They added freaking Jalen Waddle, and we're all excited about that. Obviously, Waddle, a little bit of an injury in practice right now, but sounds like he's going to be fine. Of course, Waddle has been banged up many times over the course of his career. That's really the one trapdoor he can fall under. But they go deep at pass catcher as well, even if Waddle was to miss time. And Sean Payton's still, the figurehead of this team, but I do kind of wonder if Davis Webb is the play caller now because of his relationship with Bo Nix, and maybe that's a big signal in favor of Nix. I just feel like he's a guy that doesn't get talked about enough as a really productive passer and checks a lot of the boxes for the yellow light guys the green light guys that we talked about here.
Yeah, it's great to spotlight him here. Obviously part of a Payton offense and that really deep receiver room. We're going to talk mostly about Waddle and Sutton when we talk about it, but Troy Franklin was a touchdown guy. Decent part of last season, and Pat Bryant has talent, and Marvin Mims really is just always going to be one of these per snap guys who doesn't seem to get on the field as much, but man, if he's your fifth option in a wide receiver room, you've done really well. They have backs who can catch the ball as well. Perhaps the reason why I haven't spent that much time talking about Nix this summer and I haven't really drafted him that proactively is just because the last time we saw him, he got hurt right before the AFC championship game. He got hurt in that great divisional playoff overtime game against Buffalo. So that makes me just a little bit nervous. He needs his legs. He needs his resourcefulness to hit the high end of his range. But as you mentioned, man, quarterback seven the last 2 years. Bo Nix has been a plus player for the last two seasons, and it's possible he's being disrespected right now.
Right. See, that's exactly my thought process. You said that way better than I did. And not that this isn't always the best analysis. Like, this guy's finished at this level the last few years. Like, why is he being drafted at this level? That can be faulty at sometimes. But with this position specifically, I don't really see any reason other than, the health is a big part of it for sure. But if we're talking about Waddle, as I've been talking about all offseason since that trade happened, being like this big impact player for the team, it just seems a little odd that we're drafting Bo Nix behind where he's finished the last 2 years when he's going to inject this really, really good player into the passing game here. That just doesn't quite sit right with me. So he is definitely somebody that I think is a green light player for me here. We're going to take a quick break. We come back on the other side of it. We'll get into the yellow light players at the quarterback position right after this. All right, we're back. Let's get into the yellow light players here at the quarterback position, Scott. The two guys you were touching on earlier were Brock Purdy and Jackson Dart, who are the only ones that are actually being drafted as QB1s right now. We'll get into Matthew Stafford, Kyler Murray, and Malik Willis here in just a moment. But sticking on Purdy and Dart, I don't know that we need to have an extended conversation about the Purdy thing, because I think you summarized that really well, and I feel the exact same way that a month ago I was really into Purdy. And I'm not going to say, you know, to again bring up Dave Dameshek, that Ricky Pearsall is the Jenga piece of the 49ers offense. I don't think he would qualify as that, but Mike Evans not practicing, the whole deal, like it just makes you a little bit nervous about the fragility of it all. Dart, I think, is interesting, because one thing you said on the other side of the break, and I really agree with this, is that he's the guy that I think, and I don't necessarily know that he's a yellow light player for me. I have him as QB10, so I guess I'm kind of ahead of our consensus rankings on Dart. He is the one that I think could really beat us if we're calling him a yellow light player, which is why I think we probably don't have him as a true red light guy, just because he's a young player. He obviously is, a maybe to his fault sometimes, he's a proactive runner. And the Malik Nabers thing, like, we get another positive report again this week, from ESPN, that he is like trending towards playing week one. That doesn't mean he's going to be himself in week one. It doesn't mean he won't be on a snap count in week one, but that's just a fundamentally more positive situation than it was a couple of months ago here.
Can I throw cold water on this in two words? Matt Nagy.
Do it.
Offensive coordinator. Yeah. That's what makes me nervous. and also, just Dart has to run proactively to justify where he's going to be drafted. And yeah, I don't mind that. It's just, man, you got to try to avoid these kill shots. Sometimes you have to accept it's a good time to slide. It's a good time to run out of bounds. It's maybe just a good time to throw the ball to the cheerleaders and not run on a specific play. He just was reckless with his running last year in a way that I don't think he can get away with long term. And also, I want to see how that chemistry with Nabers, you know, we talked about last year, they really basically weren't even together at all. So they're building this from square one. Malik Nabers at his best is the top five NFL receiver. You can easily tell yourself a story where he'll be a first round pick next year if healthy. But these guys need to get going, need to get up to speed. Do they have the right pieces complementing them in this passing game? Obviously, Wandale Robinson is gone. People are hoping Isaiah Likely can pop in this passing game. There's some younger players they've added. But Dart is... I know this is going to sound contradictory. I'm concerned about him beating me, but he is somebody I'm not going to draft proactively. I have him yellow because if I'm in a room of other people who are kind of quasi Dart people, I might just say the heck with it. Give me a FOMO share. I don't want to be locked out in case he has the breakout season and he's quarterback three at the end of the year. But more to me, between Nagy and the reckless running, I'm more out on Dart than I am in.
Yeah, I mean, for me, from a tier perspective, this is my third tier of quarterbacks, which goes all the way from QB7 to QB15, which just, again, speaks to the quality of the position. He is right smack in the middle, and usually I don't shop in the middle of that tier. Like, I want the beginning, or I want the, you know, you talk about the U, right? I want either the top end of the U or the bottom end of it. I don't necessarily shop in that bottom end of it. But one of those players that's in the bottom end of the U is Kyler Murray, who you have as a yellow light player. I think the case for Kyler Murray is pretty obvious, right? He's the one who gets to throw to Justin Jefferson. He is a proactive runner in his own right. Our rankings on Kyler Murray from a group perspective are kind of all over the place. We've got somebody as high as QB14. We've got somebody that's me, by the way. I'm that somebody. We've got somebody that's all the way down there at QB19. So I guess the question here from a Kyler Murray standpoint, Scott, is how convinced are you that he is the 17 game starter for the Minnesota Vikings?
You know, I just get excited when you talk about the disparities here in the Kyler Murray ranking. Just the idea that we have Josh and Hayden with us and Joel Smith with us, in addition to Yumi and Boone. We have never had more ranking power as a six-man unit. And I think our consensus rankings is going to be very powerful this year, even though we're going to have times where we don't agree on somebody. And Kyler Murray is one of those guys. Matt, if I could have camera access to all the practice reps that one team is running this year, I think Minnesota is where I'd go, because I want to see what's going on. Are they coaching up Kyler Murray and getting his bad mojo from Arizona washed off? Is there any chance that J.J. McCarthy really could be a factor here? Carson Wentz is your third string quarterback. Dare he have to play this season? I've gotten kind of cold feet. Kyler Murray is somebody, Matt, 6 weeks ago I would have said, okay, blame it all on J.J. McCarthy. Kevin O'Connell is one of the best play callers, one of the best quarterback whisperers in football. We all know the long list of ordinary talents he's made into their best versions of themselves. I was ready to blame it on McCarthy, even though I wasn't really a Murray. I've never really been a Murray guy, and certainly he hasn't played good football for a while. But I was like, okay, they get Kyler. They're accepting the mistake with McCarthy, but they didn't give Kyler a lot of money. It sounds like I'm starting to believe that Murray still has to win the job. I thought like 2 months ago that was preposterous. Of course he's going to be their starter. I still think he will be, but I mean, they're not handing him anything. And there were early whispers that the receivers were getting frustrated, that Murray was behind schedule on a lot of throws, and they were missing a lot of connections. I backed off drafting Justin Jefferson where he goes. He's become a red light player for me. And, man, that's not comfortable to say that because he's such a talented guy. Addison, yellow at best. That probably the day's done drafting TJ Hawkinson. But I want to believe in O'Connell. I just don't know what version of Murray they're getting. And I always say he's not getting any taller, Kyler Murray. He had trouble making certain throws over the middle of the field. He never really got an end zone connection with Trey McBride. And the most damning thing about Murray is the moment he was out of that offense, all of a sudden Jacoby Brissett, an NFL journeyman, nobody's idea of a special talent. He unlocked everybody in Arizona, maybe not Marvin Harrison. But, man, Wilson had a breakout season. McBride went nuclear and started scoring touchdowns. So 2 months ago, I was going to be like, yeah, Murray, green light, at least a strong yellow. Now, I don't know what to do with Kyler Murray. Again, a player who I think could beat me. I already have some shares of Kyler Murray, and I think I'm going to probably coast on those so I'm not locked out if he breaks out. But I'm not going to put myself in a position where Kyler Murray can tank my fantasy season.
Yeah, I just wish he'd already slammed the door shut, you know, which just makes me think that it makes me think we're seeing some more old Kyler Murray stuff, which we've seen over the course of his career. You know, you mentioned it, like he's been an up and he's had some really high highs. He's had some really low lows. And I also think that while he is a boomer bust player, this is a boomer bust offense here. That's a little bit fragile too. I mean, Justin Jefferson is great. I think Jordan Addison is a solid wide receiver too. There's some, you know, questions along the offensive line, but it should be better as long as Darisol is healthy this year. The backfield gives me some pause. I don't know. There's just some overall – I just felt better. I'm with you. I felt better about the Kyler Murray situation about a month ago than I do right now. Like, I remember saying back in May or June or something to Joel, like, I'm going to be a Kyler Murray guy in fantasy this year. When I said that, I imagined that by August 9th, it was already Kyler Murray's a starter and we're all set. But we could definitely see a situation where he gets, you know, 13 starts and JJ gets 4. I think that's very live. Let's talk Matthew Stafford here. So I kind of want to save Malik Willis for the sleeper section because he's just like a classic sleeper, even if he's a yellow light player. Why Matthew Stafford, the reigning MVP, yellow light for you?
Just a nut. I realize he's coming off the MVP season. He's tied to Puka. He's tied to Davante Adams. He's tied to Sean McVay. What's wrong with that? You know, great infrastructure. But the age of Stafford, the obvious regression kicked in. Davante Adams at his age, what, age 34 season, I think it is for Adams. You worry about a little bit of regression there. Puka's a high contact player. There may be a little bit of off-field judgment risk with Puka at times. I think the Rams offense just takes a mild step back. Sean McVay can't help but have a good offense. But I think maybe it's more of a top 10 offense than a top 5 offense this year. I could still be fine with Stafford as my second quarterback, whether a standard start one or a second starter in a super flex format. I'm drafting a lot of Blake Corum this year, who I think is a great hedge against Williams. That can be a 60-40 backfield. But Stafford also nothing as a runner. We know that. I just think a regression kicks in, and it this offense takes like a half step backwards.
I think that's all very fair. There's just a lot of risks on this Rams offense, a lot of trap doors that they can step through here. But if we know what it looks like if it runs pure. And they didn't even run pure last year, right? Like Adams missed time, Puka missed a game. They didn't necessarily run pure, but from an efficiency perspective, they did. So definitely some things to keep in mind with the Rams here. But the reality is like 99th overall, a lot of people aren't drafting Matthew Stafford to be like what he was last year. There's already some regression baked in. But yeah, definitely things to be aware of on the Stafford front. We're going to take another quick break. We come back. We've got our red light players in drafts this year. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And Scott, we've teased this a lot. Our red light grouping here, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, for the most part, at least 75% here, math, our guys in that second tier that were just like not shopping in that range. To me, I would also say, honestly, you know, Drake May is a little bit of a red light player for me. Like, I don't necessarily think he's going to be beating me from this group. But is there, of the three guys there, the Hurts, the Burrow, the Lamar Jackson, is there one of them in here that makes you nervous from like an individual player perspective? Maybe like, actually, let's put Hurst to the side because we talked about him earlier. Does like Lamar in a new situation, new offense, or Burrow, just what we've seen over the course of his career, do you ever, and either of those guys make you nervous from an individual player perspective, or is it more, I'm not drafting these guys, they're red light because of where they go in the drafts?
I'm probably more out on Jackson because of the cost. The Burrow case is a combination of the cost and some concerns. He's had trouble staying healthy, the offensive line. Maybe this is the idea that LOL Bengals, they're just going to screw it up one way or another. But with Jackson, ask yourself, is he going to run for a bunch of touchdowns? Is there a dynamic touchdown scorer on this offense in the passing game? Because it hasn't been Zay Flowers. It hasn't been Bateman. I know they have a rookie receiver who's been popping this summer, and Mark Andrews maybe might have another 8 to 10 touchdown season in him. You have to tell yourself a story that either Jackson's going to boost up their rushing production. He's generally not somebody who gets the chippies from close or even runs to his full potential. It's more of a club in his bag that he can use as opposed to a club that he features. I realize we're excited about the play calling change, but that's most teams in the NFL when they change their play callers. We talk ourselves into the new guy. We'll see if Doyle justifies that hype. I would love it for this to be the season where Zay Flowers scores 10 touchdowns. But, man, he just hasn't scored any from in close before. I just think this team is going to get inside the five, and it's going to be the Derrick Henry show again. I realize he's at an age where we're nervous to draft him, but I feel like he's got 15 touchdowns sitting in his back pocket. So with Burrow, we talked about, you know, Rich Rebar and the arbitrage plays. My buddy Mike Salfino likes to talk about that stuff as well. And I mean, what does Burrow give you that you don't get from Dak Prescott? When you can see an arbitrage combo that's this clean, this similar, they're the same freaking team. Bad defenses, offense that's designed around two major wide receivers, right? Guys were drafting in round one, round two. You know, we're just thrilled to put out every week. Round three maybe for T. Higgins, but whatever, he goes early, he might go at the turn. I can't tell me why. Explain this why I'm five. Why is Dak Prescott better? I'm sorry. Why is Joe Burrow better than Dak Prescott? I can't come up with a good answer for that.
I don't know. I don't know, dude. Like it's a great point, and I'm with you on it. Like it's just to me, it's not even so much. There's like definitely. I don't even know if definitely is the right word to use, but there's certainly a possibility that there's just a more nuclear season available for Burrow if he stays healthy for all 17 games and Jamar and T stay healthy for all 17 games and that defense doesn't get any better. You know, there obviously is a chance that they are better, you know, and we're not looking at the complete carnival Bengals, but you know, it's a totally fair point. Over the last three seasons, so 2023 to 2025, Joe Burrow averages 18.7 points per game, Dak Prescott 18.4. You're just really not giving up all of that much. And then you go down one bit to the next tier, the arbitrage and the arbitrage, Jared Goff, who, as you're sitting there talking about, like, I think I have the least faith in the Lions defense of those three. Like, I think they're more trending down while the other two defenses by default for Cincinnati, and I actually think there are some good changes happening in Dallas, those defenses are probably trending up. Jared Goff, 17.85 points. Like, you're really not giving up all of that much going to Jared Goff, even though, again, the theoretical ceiling is probably not as high for him. And he has two great receivers to throw to, and a tight end who should be healthy this year, and the number one overall pick in fantasy in the backfield, a lot of which is based on the fact that people are optimistic about his receiving going up as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons for me, I think, to not click on Joe Burrow. I have him 59th overall. His ADP is 50th overall. And Lamar is 39th overall. I have him 47th overall.
I realize this is supposed to be more about the red in Burrow than it is about the green in Prescott. But I just want to say this again. Prescott, his five best fantasy seasons are quarterback two, quarterback three, quarterback six, quarterback seven, quarterback six. He was quarterback six last year. He was quarterback three back in 2023. And you look at his career resume, this black ink, meaning league-leading stats all over the place, 36 touchdowns totally. In 2003, led the league. He led the league in completions last year, in completions in 2023. He's been over 4,400 passing yards in four different seasons. I think you can make a case that Dak Prescott has been the most underrated quarterback in football for, like, if it's not Brock Purdy, maybe it's Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to argue with you on that one. I'm very much in on Dak Prescott this year. Just one other player to consider here in the red light section is Patrick Mahomes, who definitely goes much later than all these guys. He's the 100th overall player off the board. Yet you are saying Mahomes is a red light player. He is the very top of my fourth tier, which means I'm usually not drafting Mahomes in a one quarterback league. So explain the case against Patrick Mahomes this year.
First of all, this idea that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are just going to magically make everything sing in this offense. Last 3 years, Kansas City Chiefs, 15th, 15th, and 21st in points. Last 2 years, Kansas City Chiefs, 16th and 20th in offensive yards. Now, I realize Mahomes missed some time last year, but it wasn't like he missed half the season. He missed like the last, you know, three or four games of the season. This is a Maserati that's been like a, you know, just like a more of a junker car the last couple of seasons. So, well, okay, well, who's on the offense? It's the last lap of Travis Kelce. He's becoming a catch and fall guy now. I don't know what Xavier Worthy is. We talked about the reservations of drafting Rashee Rice. Maybe this offense revolves around Kenneth Walker, dare I say. Producer Colin was talking about Patrick Mahomes is the guy that your uncle who does one fantasy draft a year right before the season. You know, he's probably drafting out of a magazine. Nothing wrong with magazines, but you know, by the time September 1st rolls around, it's not all that relevant anymore. That's the guy who's drafting Patrick Mahomes. You don't want to be your uncle. You don't want to be that guy. You don't want to draft out of something that was published back in the spring. You're better than that.
I think the offense is going to revolve around Kenneth Walker. That's the thing. To me, this looks like a year where I don't even necessarily think this is bad for the Chiefs. I think they could win a lot of games doing it this way. Be more of a rock fight team. Lean on the run game. Lean on the defense, where they more heavily invested in transforming that defense this offseason than they did in the passing game in particular. There's no question. I don't want to totally just rule out Mahomes as a quarterback because, number one, he's Patrick Mahomes. He's one of the best quarterbacks we've seen play the game. And the offensive line is good. And they do have Cyrus Allen, you know, the next greatest receiver of all time on the roster as well. So I don't want to totally rule that out. Again, hard to say, is that a bit or is that serious? But the reality is, I do want to just at least leave the door open that this can be a good offense for the Kansas City Chiefs and an efficient offense because Kenneth Walker fundamentally changes everything as a runner. But I think that can still equate to him being, you know, a solid fantasy quarterback and not somebody that at his ADP really beats you.
There's one other thing we have to mention with Mahomes. I should have mentioned up front. Last year, he was his most resourceful year as a runner. Volume, efficiency, rushing touchdowns. He has a major knee blowout. There's no way that stuff year over year is going to be repeatable. They don't want to play that way. And you can just basically say goodbye to all 80% of those stats, I think.
Yeah, based on how they've acted this offseason, they don't want to do that. And they don't want to do as much of the like scammy underneath stuff. I think this is a team that wants to push the ball vertically and they want to have a really good running game. That's where the Kenneth Walker thing comes into play. Like, Kenneth Walker wanted to leave Seattle after being kind of like a part-time back there and kind of seeing his role reduced despite the fact that he was the Super Bowl MVP. He wanted to go somewhere where he is going to be the guy. Like, he's going to be the guy in this backfield. And I think it's just weird to say when Patrick Mahomes is a future Hall of Famer, Travis Kelce, future Hall of Famer, the whole deal. The most important player on this offense this year, I do think it's going to be Kenneth Walker. He's the guy who I want to keep climbing up my overall rankings. And I'm not crossing off like Mahomes will be terrible this year or anything. He's just not somebody at 100th overall that I'm really drafting proactively.
So answer this question for me. If Patrick Mahomes beats his ADP this year, it's because fill in the blank beat his ADP among the pass catchers.
It's because Matt Harmon was right about Cyrus Allen, and he really is like the next. He was like a massive steal. I truly think that's the only way that this happens because, you know, Xavier Worthy, I want to give him a pass for a lot of what happened last year because he blasted Travis Kelce and him got, you know, they collided on the mesh concept, blasted his shoulder four plays into the damn season. But his shoulder is hurt again. Like that's already a problem. Rashee Rice, not only does he have all the red flags we've talked about, he's a health risk, the whole deal. Like, and he's a guy that they want to get away from some of that stuff in the offense. They need like a real deal man coverage beater. And I mean, that's what Cyrus Allen is for sure. So that's the way that I truly think that's the way that this goes wrong. And, you know, if that happens, I mean, my Cyrus Allen bags are packed. I don't care about the fact that I don't draft Patrick Mahomes this year in fantasy.
Well, from your lips to God's ears. I mean, let's do it. Let's get Allen and all of our teams as a Mr. Relevant fantasy pick.
There we go. I can't believe I didn't have him be one of my $1 all-stars at the Fantasy Football Expo. That's pretty humiliating. Some of the guys that we think might beat Patrick Mahomes from an overall scoring perspective, we will discuss about those guys in our sleeper section, which we will get into right after this quick break. All right, we're back, and let's get into it, Scott. Quarterback sleepers here for the people. If we're sitting here talking about, man, this position is really interesting, it's really deep, this is where we feel the depth of the position once we get out of the top 120 picks in Yahoo drafts right now. You brought four to the table. We're also going to include Malik Willis in this discussion, who maybe is a little bit of a yellow light player for you at 130th overall. But let's quickly touch on Malik Willis here. I think the appeal is obvious. He is perhaps the most efficient runner at the quarterback position right now. I know that sounds crazy, but the stats do bear it out. And yet, a lot of questions in the passing game, of course. So, Scott, what are your hesitations on Malik Willis? Why is he not a green light sleeper for you this late in the draft?
Only because I just question the passing ceiling. Number one, he really hasn't been asked to throw the ball all that much, even with the decent infrastructure he had in Green Bay, and Miami has set him up to fail with the receivers they have right now. But Malik Willis is going to have games where he doesn't play well this year and he still scores 19 points. He's obviously the most Konami-ish code of the back nine quarterbacks. So, I mean, back nine ADP, not back nine in age, because Willis is still a young player. But he's going to be a player. I don't know that you want to watch him if you roster him in fantasy this year, but man, it's going to be a lot of Miami got blown out again, and there's Malik Willis running in his second touchdown, and now he's quarterback three for the week.
Yeah. My thing with Malik Willis, Scott, is I just feel as if he is going to be QB 22 on the week right up until the fourth quarter, where he has like three scrambles that just make him a QB one every single week. So again, I still have him ranked probably in the same range as you, QB 19. And the only reason I would say then maybe I'm not just moonwalking him right into the QB1 range is just that it's a lot of that same stuff that people said about Justin Fields last year. Well, he can't get benched. He can't get benched. Look, everybody can get benched. And Justin Fields did indeed get benched. And like, there's definitely a world. I don't think it's likely, but there is a world where, you know, Quinn Ewers is starting games for this Dolphins team because it just never comes together. But I do think that he's going to have big weeks as Malik Willis. So again, I'm pretty comfortable, as I said, at the other side earlier on the show, doing like in a single quarterback league, waiting all the way to get Malik Willis and Tyler Shuck. And I want to talk about Tyler Shuck here, 131st overall ADP. He never was like a big time fantasy quarterback really at any point last year. At the same time, though, I'm really excited about this Saints offense. The more and more I think about it, the more excited I get. So where are you at on Tyler Shuck?
Yeah, I'm in on Shuck again. You know, and I disagree that he maybe wasn't that exciting for fantasy. His weekly scoring last 5 weeks, quarterback 6, quarterback 16, quarterback 16, quarterback 9, quarterback 4. So he was in there's a quarterback 12 before that segment. So he was a quarterback 1 and 4 the last 6 weeks. Kellen Moore, right answer. Chris Olave, dynamic receiver. They drafted a first-round receiver. I even think Juwan Johnson is grossly underrated at the tight end position. Get him as your second tight end. Play you can regress and win on. I'm going to write about that tomorrow. But Saints were fun last year at the end of last season. I think they could be one of these, not sure they're good, but they're kind of fun. They're kind of frisky. They're scoring 24, 27 points a week, indoor schedule. Yeah, I think Shuck is actually well-respected in fantasy. He's only ranked as low as he is, just it speaks to the depth of the position. But man, he would be a great quarterback 3 in Superflex or even a quarterback 2 on certain builds. I believe in Kellen Moore, and I believe in Tyler Shuck. Saints had the last laugh. They drafted an old quarterback. He was kind of a quasi-prospect, and man, he was looking the part at the end of last season.
Yeah, he really looked like a big boy, real deal quarterback last year, just getting in the gun and shooting from the far hash to the field, like these big outbreaking routes outside the numbers too. Made some real deal big boy throws. It was really stark watching Chris Olave with Spencer Rattler in the start of the year for reception perception. And like, I think Spencer Rattler is a totally fine backup quarterback in the league, and I think is actually a nice little hit. Like, you can get through a rough patch with Spencer Rattler, and that offense was pretty good with him at times. But Rattler just could never quite, and the stats bear this out, could never activate Chris Olave over the middle of the field. And then as soon as Tyler Shuck gets in there, he's just ripping these big dig routes to Chris Olave. And that's a route that Jordan Tyson runs really well, in addition to you're seeing him from camp run these big outbreaking routes really well, which, again, Shuck can push the ball outside the numbers. So, yeah, to me, this is an offense on the upswing. I want to get Tyler Shuck on the upswing as well. I love the way you frame this guy. Like, he's a perfect QB2 target in Superflex right now.
And again, Kellen Moore. And they want to play at a fast pace, too. So they're probably getting a few extra snaps every week as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Kellen Moore is probably not in the Ben Johnson, the Liam Cohen, you know, maybe Mike McDaniel tier of play callers, but he's right up there, man. Like, he's pretty close. And from a pace perspective, you know, there's just no question. This is a team that is going to push the pace overall over the
course. Do you go to the moon with Kellen Moore? Maybe not. Is he a right answer? Absolutely.
Yeah, you're getting out of the atmosphere at least. Jordan Love, I think, is an interesting one here that you put as a green light player. I believe he's in the sleeper section here at 124th overall. Make the case for Jordan Love, Scott, because if you just look at, again, just raw fantasy numbers over the last 3 years, he averages 16.8 points, does Jordan Love, you know, QB19 over that span. So where do we see the progression here from Love to get him into this ballpark?
Well, we've seen some ceiling here. He was quarterback 5 back in 2023, and then the next season he gets hurt early in the year, kind of ruins that year. And then last year, you just wonder that the offense being designed around Jacobs, all the platooning at the wide receiver position. I'm believing that they're finally done with that they're going to streamline, and we can finally draft their three receivers proactively. Hopefully they get Tucker Kraft back at full throttle early in the season. I'm not sure if week one is realistic for that, but this could be a fun offense if they actually play their best players. I still think LaFleur is a right answer as their offensive play designer, and the world is over Jordan Love. You know, nobody remembers now because NFL seasons age like dog season. So when I say he was quarterback 5 in 2023, that might as well be 1976. I mean, it's just so long ago that nobody cares about it anymore. But I believe that finally, Matt LaFleur has a sense of how he wants to build this passing game. It's not going to be, let's get our best players off the field, which has been like the last couple of years. We always trot out the stat that no Green Bay pass catcher has gone past 100 targets since they lost Devontae Adams. And that's been a bug, not a feature. This year, it's going to get fixed. This year, Jordan Love, you're going to draft him. He's at least going to get you what you drafted him for. He definitely can end the season as a top 12 fantasy quarterback.
Yeah, 14th in pass attempts per game over the last 3 years. I do think that changes. That's the thing where I believe there's just going to be more passing volume this year. Like, Jacobs off-field stuff kind of on the downswing too of his career. The defense is not going to be as good as previous seasons, and I think they're going to live out of 11 personnel a lot more, which is good news for Jaden Reed, who's also a little banged up right now. Matthew Golden, a little banged up. That is the one thing I would say is a little nerve-wracking as someone that wants to believe in this Green Bay passing game. I love the fact that they've cut down to probably just these three receivers, no rotation, the whole deal. But Tucker Kraft coming back from an injury, Christian Watson's never been the picture of health, Reed has never been the picture of health and is banged up right now, Matthew Golden also dealing with a little bit of an injury. You know, we're a couple of injuries away from Savion Williams and Sky Moore running a lot of routes for this team. I do just want to acknowledge that at least.
But also remember, their most important defensive player, Micah Parsons, is on the PUP, and Jacob, all the concerns you have at Jacobs, if I was on the running back show, which you'll do with Ray, I would say that he is my red light running back or one of my red light running backs. I don't want to be drafting the back nine of Josh Jacobs. So this offense, which has not been about Jordan Love for the last two seasons, there's going to be a shift in that. Their play, generally, when you look at the play calling tendencies and how often teams throw in neutral situations, Green Bay is usually 28th in that stat. This year, they're going to have to move up. And I think LaFleur is a smart enough coach to realize that.
We have Daniel Jones as a green light player, a sleeper. And I mean, I think the case for that is pretty obvious. Although obviously, you know, his top two receivers are dealing with injuries. Josh Downs, probably not serious, but a little bit of a groin injury. Alec Pierce, I mean, just no timeline for his return. Still, that is a little worrisome. But obviously, just where he's going ADP wise, if he can be even close to the player he was last year, that's value. But the guy I want to talk about here before we get out of here, Scott, is actually a player who I think the industry has completely overcorrected on, and that's Baker Mayfield. 126th overall ADP. I mean, he's not even close to being the QB in QB1 range. And last year, I thought Mayfield was way overdrafted and people were way too excited about Mayfield as a fantasy quarterback. And now I think the industry has really overcorrected on him. He's QB10 in points per game over the last 3 years since he arrived with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I know Mike Evans is gone. Obviously, that stinks. But they have depth at this position. Like Ted Hurst flashing in camp as a rookie. Chris Godwin probably healthier this year than he... I mean, yeah, most likely healthier than he was last year. I think Emeka Ibuka is a dark horse to lead the NFL in catches this year, as I've talked about on the show. You know, Jalen McMillan a little banged up, but he's a good vertical receiver as well. This offensive line, like if we're talking about, we're drafting offensive lines and play callers. I think Zach Robinson is above board as a play caller, and I think this is a top five offensive line in the league. Like, again, I'll personally admit, like, my feelings on Baker Mayfield kind of are a little bit of a moving target as a franchise quarterback, as an answer. But I do kind of like that he's, you know, coming in a little chippy this year, talking about like he's doing the whole nobody respects me thing. They didn't give me a contract extension. I just think Baker Mayfield is very undervalued as the 126th player off the board, and somebody that if he was a top 10 fantasy quarterback, because the line is good and all these pass catchers are good and Zach Robinson moves guys around and stuff, like that would 0% surprise me. And based on the ADP, it sounds like a lot of people would be pretty surprised.
Yeah, another regression win candidate where he quarterback 10, yeah. quarterback 4, quarterback 12 the last three seasons. Now, part of that speaks to Mayfield playing 17 games in all those seasons. So those are cumulative point ranks. But still, he's always been a little bit underrated. And you like Baker coming in hot. You like Baker with the chip on his shoulder. Hopefully they have the wide receiver depth to offset the loss of Mike Evans. But you just listed a bunch of guys who are all talented. And even their running backs can catch the ball. To all three of them, I think, have pass-catching chops. So in the offensive line being good, Zach Robinson is kind of the X factor here. I don't know what he did that was so impressive in Atlanta that got him this Tampa Bay gig in the first place. I think at the end of the year, we're going to be saying, oh, you know, Zach Robinson's finally kind of finding his way in the NFL McVay tree and all that. Or it's going to be like, oh, how did Zach Robinson get this job? Maybe we need to get another guy in here. I'm not sure where we're going to get to the fork in the road, which direction we're going to take. But with you on Baker Mayfield, and this is, look, the boring – I used to talk about fantasy baseball, the Ibanez All-Stars, the boring veteran value guys. Like Cortland Sutton's one of those guys, boring veteran. Nobody's excited. Nobody goes to their draft thinking about drafting Cortland Sutton. Nobody goes to their draft thinking about drafting Baker Mayfield. But, man, you're drafting him above his floor. And there's certainly upside here because he's shown it the last 3 years. Again, I get it. He's going to make a bonehead decision here and there. He's going to throw a few balls to the other team. But Baker Mayfield, his entire time in Tampa Bay has been fantasy relevant. I don't see why that would change in 2026.
Neither do I. I love the way you're saying that. Like he goes later than his floor is if he stays healthy for 17 games. I really like the Baker Mayfield thing. That's something I didn't expect to say on the QB preview podcast, but that's when you look at the ADP and you're raising an eyebrow at that. Scott, great show here today. I think we gave the full deep dive on quarterbacks in 2026. If you come away from this not knowing what to do about your quarterback position, I guess just rewind. Like, watch the video over again, listen to the episode again, because we gave you a full deep dive on this whole thing. And position preview week, it rolls on here on the channel, on the show, throughout the course of the next few days. Tomorrow, it is a big show. Ray Garvin joins me for the wide receiver position preview. That's right. Reception perception meets Trinity score. If we can't figure out how to get your wide receivers right by the end of that 90 minutes, something has gone terribly, terribly wrong. So I think you guys are going to love this show. It will be live, as we always are, 4 p.m. Eastern, right here on this YouTube channel. We'll see you all tomorrow. Until then, we are out.